The basses, I need hardly tell you, are up to no good. My name is Nicholas Ivor Martin. I'm the Director of Operations of Lyric Opera of Chicago, and today I would like to speak to you about Giuseppe Verdi's opera, Un Ballo in Maschera. The basses are plotting against their rightful ruler, Riccardo, the same Riccardo with the noble heart you heard the rest of the chorus crooning over. In real life, Riccardo might be Gustavus III, the ruler of Sweden for the last quarter of the 18th century. Or he might be the fictitious Count of Warwick, governor of the British colony of Boston slightly earlier in the century. Or he might be Napoleon III, ruler of the French Second Republic and nephew of the original Napoleon half a century later. It all depends on your point of view. Verdi, who was a world-famous Italian opera composer writing his 23rd opera, had Gustavus III in mind, because that murdered monarch had been the subject of a popular play by French playwright Eugene Scribe. The Italian censors read the proposed script and thought, Napoleon III. Italy in 1858, the year before Ballo premiered, was not yet a unified country. Basically, the northeast was owned by the Austrians, the south by the French, and the middle by the Pope. In all those areas, censorship was a fact of life. You did not want to overexcite anyone in the theater, what with all the bomb-throwing opera-attending Italian nationalists running around. I'm not kidding, there were such people. There has been a long-running controversy over which revolutionaries use Verdi's name as an acronym and when. Among people who went to the opera for reasons other than the music, V-E-R-D-I stood for Vittore Emanuele, Re d'Italia. Victor Emmanuel was king of Piedmont, the northwest corner of the peninsula, and the nationalists were united behind him to form a single country, of which he would be Il Re, the king. Napoleon III came to the censorial mind because in 1858, an Italian nationalist tried to blow up that French ruler as he went to the opera. Now, since you're going to ask anyway, the opera was William Tell. The plot failed, the plot to blow him up, not the plot of the opera. So Napoleon decided to stay and hear the music. Cynical historians later pointed out that since Napoleon III was an elected monarch, he probably attended for political reasons, show that he was not afraid and all that. But maybe he just liked Rossini. The would-be assassin was named Felice Orsini, and on March 13th of 1858, the 38-year-old Italian would be guillotined for his actions. We don't need to spend too much time with Felice, though I can't resist pointing out two things. First, Felice, happy, is not the best name for an assassin. And second, I have a wonderful quote from an English biographer of Orsini published shortly after his execution. According to the prosecutors in his trial, Felice Orsini was born a conspirator. Whether that can be believed or not, quite certainly his mother had no notion of it. She did not realize that his infant thoughts were of a repressed and furtive trend, that when he waved his wooden spoon and gurgled, he was marshaling secret armies in craggy places, or that his wondering, unfathomable eyes, jet black and shining, screened from her view a world of incipient revolution, wherein already he was blowing up emperors and dethroning popes. Whether or not Orsini was the type that only a mother could love, neither Napoleon nor the Roman censors harbored any affection for the man. Verdi and his librettist, Antonio Somma, had actually presented their new work to the Teatro San Carlo in Naples in 1857, the year before Orsini went ballistic, and gotten provisional approval. The king would have to become a count, the censors didn't want a monarch murdered on stage, and the location would be moved from Stockholm to Stettin, a harbor on the Baltic Sea. So far, so good. Then Orsini set off his bomb, literally, and the censors decided they needed a few more changes. Verdi was furious. Rehearsals were about to begin, and he stormed off to Rome, finished score in hand. The composer's reception in Rome was slightly better. The Roman censors had grievances of their own, of course. The name of the opera changed for a third time, becoming Un Ballo in Maschera, a masked ball. The objection to the first title, Gustavo III, had been obvious. What they didn't like about Una Vendetta in Domino, Revenge in Disguise, I couldn't say. Oddly, the censors signed off on the now final version in which the king turned count becomes the British governor of Boston. From the Italian perspective, Boston might as well have been the far side of the moon. But associating the assassination with the British suggests that the Roman censors did not read the small print in Orsini's file. Before attempting to kill Napoleon III, Orsini had warmed up on Pope Pius IX, who made the mistake of pardoning a life sentence against the troublemaker. Orsini ended up in Britain, where the crowds went wild over his many scurrilous adventures. He became a popular hero, in fact. Consequently, when Orsini tried to blow up Napoleon III, the French thought it was a British plot. It did not help that the bombs were said to have been made in England. The French were annoyed. Still, on February the 17th, 1859, after an enormously successful opening night, Un ballo in maschera passed into the opera canon, and at least temporarily, beyond the reach of the censors.